Let's start what we have come into the room to do. Right on. Here goes. One, two, three.
Jumbo Ann Arbor and the world. This is Rebecca Harden coming to you from the studios of WCBN-FM Ann Arbor, where, in all honesty, I have to tell you all that it is not very hot today. In fact, it's really cool down here and comfortable. And that's great because we're going to do a really hot show for you about Kenya and that broader East African region in honor of our nation's president, Barack Obama, landing in Nairobi this morning. We have some eyewitness accounts of the celebration and pomp in Nairobi. And we're joined in the studio today by a very special guest, Ella Tomei, a research assistant professor at the School for Public Health and in the Center for Social Epidemiology. Ella, welcome.
Thank you so much, Rebecca. It's great to be here, though it's, you know, kind of cool.
You were expecting, well, let's see if we can heat things up.
All right.
And Ella, we're really excited to hear from you, given that you were in Nairobi as recently as basically last week, teaching workshops.
That's right.
On scientific writing and critical thinking. Mm-hmm. So we have lots of information about those collaborations with our colleagues in Nairobi. I'm also joined by my erstwhile co-host, Sam Molnar.
Jumbo.
Habari Gani, Mzuri Sana, and Jennifer Johnson.
Hello, everyone.
Which is to say that we have some actual East Africa expertise in the room. One more thing before we go to a quick musical break. I'm going to tell you that when we come back from this first tune, Pearl Zhang, your host and guide in many matters of sustainability, is going to talk to us about her recent work in natural areas around town with visiting Chinese students and scholars, helping to make Ann Arbor's, you know, green features more and more internationally enjoyable and understood. So Pearl, welcome as well. We'll be back in just a moment, but let's start out with a tune that has been heating up Kenyan dance floors this summer. It's a Just a Band tune. Just a Band is kind of a group of cool tech geeks that met at Kenyatta University when they were all students. So listen up, you students out there. Let's make some music. This one's coming to you from Kenyan students who've become a global phenomenon with their lush mix of funk, disco, electronic. And this song is one that you'll recognize as tapping into a stream of Afro-optimism we often drink from on this show. Let's have a listen to Just a Band, and we'll be back in a moment with a really hot show for you.
Don't tell me what I can and can't do. I can change the world.
Who's in the boat?
African with black skin, it doesn't mean that I won't win if I try. It doesn't matter where you've been, what you've seen, what you know I'm gonna win. I got the heart of a champion. A champion. So don't tell me what I can and can't do. I can change the world. Can't rain forever, can't be bad forever. Can't rain forever, can't be bad forever. Can't rain forever, can't be bad forever. Can't rain forever, forever, forever. If I don't do nothing, then nothing will be done. If I don't say something, then nothing will be said. There's voices to be heard and what to be done. And I refuse to be a statistic. Yes, you didn't know my father. It shouldn't matter. We can be one.
That was Just a Band, and this is It's Hot in Here. And this is WCBN FM Ann Arbor. Pearl Zhang is here with us, and we have had the great pleasure of enjoying her deep commentary and engagement with others' work. And now we're interested to know, what have you been up to this summer?
Just relaxing, hanging around.
Oh, sure, sure.
But I want to share a experience that I had this Wednesday. Uh-huh. It was a volunteer experience with the Ann Arbor Natural Area Preservation. And they're having a group of Chinese students, they're around 8 to 15 years old, coming here to have some summer camp event.
Wow.
Yeah, and my friend, who's a recent graduated SNRE student, Katie Whitechek, uh-huh. is the outreach coordinator of Natural Area Preservation, also called NAP.
Uh-huh.
So she asked me for help.
Yeah. Oh, wonderful.
I love that acronym. As someone who has often napped in the Arboretum and it's other natural areas around town, I think NAP is the perfect acronym for Natural Area Preservation.
It's restorative, yeah. not boring. Yes. Not at all. So what did that day entail with the students?
Yeah, so the students are divided into two groups. The younger group is 8 to 11 years old, and the older group is 12 to 15. Mm-hmm. So the older group mainly help cut down some invasive species, including Ooh. Honeysuckle and buckthorn.
Mm-hmm.
And the younger group just help trim the trail and then also pick up the trash around the area.
Interesting. And mm-hmm. what were the students saying as part of this?
Oh, they love it. And it's interesting because when Katie is saying that, oh, here's some trash to pick up, and all the students run toward it and say, oh, let me pick it up, let me pick it up. But I think the most fun part of the day is that it happened at the Cedar Bend Park. Hmm. It is one of the oldest park of Ann Arbor, and it's really beautiful. It got this name because it's around the bend area of the Huron River.
Uh-huh.
So you can also see people canoeing in the river, enjoying the summer. It's a very cool feeling in a very hot day.
It's also so interesting because I feel like there's this kind of popular vision that a lot of folks in the United States have of China as a kind of environmental liability, you know, pollution and air quality. And, you know, the idea that young Chinese nationals would come over here and help us with the kind of things that we're trying to organize ourselves to do as public works with our own youth mm-hmm. is so, to me, is such a step in the right direction at breaking down those stereotypes and everybody learning together how to just make various kinds of ecosystems more sustainable and more viable, you know?
Yeah, you're right. And they are having fun and enjoying the connection with nature. And I believe that they will bring this experience back to China and share with their peers and make more influence.
That's great.
That yeah.
Great. Well, speaking of peers, Pearl, as I understand it, you're being a social butterfly today, stopping into the studio to share this experience with us on your way to a lunch date. Am I right?
Yeah. I'm going to a newly opened Chinese burrito place in downtown.
Talk about fusion.
Yeah. That sounds delicious.
Yeah, so I can quickly share two newly opened Chinese places around town. Last week, our audio engineer, Tex, hope everybody remembers him, right?
Hello, Tex. We know you're out there.
Yeah, he invited me. He knows this newly opened Chinese dumpling restaurant in on Washtenaw. It's called Yi Xiang. And they are having great dumplings, very authentic. And we have tried that. It's really good. And this week, there's a newly opened Chinese little Mark's Cart just downtown that have this brittle-like Chinese food and worth trying. They're open from Thursday to Saturday from noon to 2 and also 5:30 to 8, somewhere around that. Yeah.
Well, those sound like some links that we should post for our listeners on our blogcast. You know, we do the broadcasts live on the air on Fridays. You can stream us also at www.hotinhere.us. But you can also If you don't have time to hear us all the way through today and you want to catch up on the conversation, you can download our or stream our archived version of this, and we will connect you to more links and more information about all the tidbits we share on the air. Pearl, thank you so much for coming in and being with us today and for the work that you do in creating an ever more international and green and hip and fun Ann Arbor for all of us.
Thank you.
All right.
I think it might be time for another tune while we rev up for our Nairobi, Kenya conversation. And I want to actually consider playing a tune that kind of goes with a dance as well. It's a tune by a band called Sauti Sora that's been really popular in the last several years in Kenya. And it's a tune that is a... The dance that goes with it is called Lipala, and you can find videos of it online, which we'll also post on our blog cast. It's really cute to watch those videos because some of the Kenyan pop artists and factory floor workers and expatriates in Germany, like Kenyans all over the world in all kinds of circumstances, are posting themselves doing this dance. It's kind of like a Gangnam style, but Kenya version. And a lot of them illustrate how Kenyans do the dance and then how people who don't really know how to do the dance, which is hilarious. So I really recommend a little video journey through this dance. But in the meantime, let's take an audio listen to the tune that goes with it to set a tone that's a little festive for our conversation about Obama and a bunch of the rest of us in Kenya and East Africa. Let's listen to Sauti Sora, Lipala. Nimekuchagua wewe, nikupende. Tuko kama chizi, kukupenda sita sizi. Moyo wangu ni mwepesi, umenikalia chapati. Nafanya vituko kama chizi, kukupenda sita sizi. Sura yako mzuri mama, mzuri mama.
Mama, 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 mama
Welcome. Welcome back to It's Hot in Here, your Friday afternoon environmental talk show for news and grooves about green issues here at home and across the world. Today, as far as across the world goes, we are honing in on Kenya, where I have to say a lot is happening with respect to U of M researchers and students. But today, as we know, Barack Obama, our nation's president, is also in Nairobi. And there's a lot going on online about that, isn't there? Like, we've been sitting here looking at some of the press and some of the comments. What are we finding? What do we see about what's going on over there? I have to say, I was up late last night with Pete Larson online. Pete Larson, who some of you may recall, has been in this studio on this show. And if any of you are interested in Pete's heavy metal music or his showcase of African heavy metal music that was a fantastic show just last year, you can find that on our archive. He also talked a lot about malaria. So we're kind of continuing this theme of more serious medical and social and environmental issues mixed with a lot of really cool tunes today. And Pete said that there are American flags all over town and also electronic signboards with Obama's face and his figure and just this kind of celebration of the man that Pete said he couldn't even imagine ever seeing here in this country. So,
yeah, when I was in Kenya in 2007, it was phenomenal how much Obama things were everywhere. So many shops were named Obama. They named a beer Obama, and there was great excitement there coming up to the 2008
election. Now, Jennifer, most of your research has been in Uganda, which I hope we'll be able to talk about in an upcoming show on this. Fabulous. But what were you doing in Kenya in 2007?
Talking to fishery scientists and managers and spending time on an island with a women's group and ladies who smoke and sell fish for a living. So really in sort of, quote, Obama's land where they were. So between Kisumu and Fangano Island.
Fantastic. So kind of from our Great Lakes to their Great Lakes.
Exactly.
Adventures continue for Jennifer Johnson. More on that in an upcoming show. But it just does give you a sense of the geography of U of M engagement in Kenya, which is actually extremely varied. Although it is kind of cool that Obama is staying in Nairobi. He's really not going to see a whole lot of the countryside on this trip. Is that correct?
It's true. It's true. And it's, I don't know, just reading the coverage of like which congressmen and women get to join him on the flight over and which on the way back, and wonder about other kinds of strategic work that this kind of visit is doing. This will be the first time after Obama leaves Nairobi, he will go to Ethiopia, where the seat of the African Union is. And this was the first time that a sitting U.S. president has perhaps ever gone to Ethiopia, is what the East African Daily News is telling me. So that's a landmark visit.
One visit Obama will be making right outside of Nairobi is the Daphne Sheldrick Orphanage, which is an important place for him to visit. It's an orphanage not for human babies, but for elephant babies, who mothers have been the victims of poaching. And it's run by the Daird Sheldrick Wildlife Trust, which has been looking after these orphans for many decades. And over 150 baby elephants live there, and Obama will be visiting and thinking and speaking and hopefully doing something about the problem of elephant poaching in Africa.
Hmm. That's an agenda that he, I think, was in part very close to the crafting of with Hillary Clinton's last major public address in her role as Secretary of State, honing in on the problem of the illegal wildlife trade in Africa and the way that it connects African sites to transnational nodes of illegal trade in arms, animal products, drugs, etc., and the notion that rule of law itself as a category applies as much to relations among humans anymore as it does to humans' relationships to animals and to the environment. So we're really seeing a kind of militarization of conservation in Africa right now that is probably also a great topic for a subsequent show. We've got some students in Kenya right now. Mike Burbage is one. He's a master's student at the School of Natural Resources here. And he has an abiding fascination with this militarization and with the way that anti-poaching efforts are often constrained to become command and control operations in this environment, with heavily armed transnational militias going in after rhino horns and elephant ivory, et cetera.
Well, so, there's also a ton of Kenyan soldiers that are fighting the war in Somalia with the African Union, trained by the United States.
The United States has been offering, quote unquote, border patrol and anti-poaching support as a kind of banner under which a lot of military training and a lot of weapons and other things have flowed to African nation states for a pretty long time. And that's nothing new. It's just, I think, intensifying in very particular ways. Mm-hmm. And the debates about who are poachers, who identifies poachers, why poachers are always, you know, in a lot of discourse, sort of non-nationals. Those are really interesting issues. So I do hope that whatever Obama sees and says on these issues can help open up some of those questions and not just foreclose on the conversations that are happening within African societies about this issue right now, as numbers of elephants and rhinos are declining precipitously, I might add. So there's that backdrop that mm-hmm. makes it difficult to talk about and think about these issues from a human rights perspective, but really, really serious concerns. That's cool, Sam, that you brought that up. Are there other places you know that he's visiting?
Well, let's see. There's a list here of the places he should visit that he's not visiting besides.
Oh, let's hear about that.
Okay. So the Luwa Wildlife Conservancy, which is a UNESCO World Heritage Site in northern Kenya, and is home to 12% of Kenya's black rhinoceros population and the largest population of zebras in the world.
Wow. And that's not something, that's not like the Mara, right? The Maasai Mara or mm-hmm. the Serengeti. It's not one that that Ernest Hemingway was hanging out in and that everybody now still wants to go to, is it?
They're gorgeous. Everyone should visit them as far as I'm concerned, but.
And I wonder, he's traveling through Kenya in a pretty interesting vehicle. Isn't that right, Jen?
Speaking of militarization.
Right. This was in the Ugandan Daily Monitor calling this today. There is an article listing 10 sort of facets of Obama's presidential car that they're calling the Beast, which has been seen in Nairobi. I'll just give a few of these points here, stating that the windows are 5 inches thick, bomb-proof, and can withstand armor-piercing bullets. Only the driver's window opens. The doors are armor-plated and 8 inches thick, and are the same weight as a Boeing 747 cabin door. And it's highlighting some additional safety features. There's the sort of luxury and the security within the vehicle itself. The interior of the car they're saying there's a system within it that is similar to how a bank vault can be locked during a robbery. Noting the driver's a CIA agent, highly trained, not just your average chauffeur. And then speculation about night vision cameras, pump action shotguns, and tear gas cannons that could be shot out of this car.
It sounds like if we just put the rhinos in that car,
yes,
the conservation and poaching problem is just done.
That's
right?
Great.
Like they just ride around, nobody can touch them, and they could even probably reproduce in the backseat. Like,
there's extra blood in there in case the president should need it, oxygen and
answer.
Firefighting equipment. Yeah, let's just put
let's
rhinos
just
in armored
car
cars.
In
yeah.
Kenya.
Yeah, okay.
I think that sounds... Well, I wonder, Ella Tomei is on my left here, and as many of you recall from the start of the show, Ella is a research assistant professor at the School of Public Health in the Center for Social Epidemiology, and Ella just got back from Nairobi. Were you driving around in a luxury vehicle with mounted assault rifles and, you know, nuclear capabilities? Or how did that go?
Like,
tell us how you got around Nairobi, Ella.
Actually, we were riding around with Pete, who you mentioned earlier.
Heavy metal and malaria research in Kenya. Pete Larson, everybody.
Right. He was a very good and very entertaining host. He was by our side the entire time, basically, when we were in Kenya. And we stayed at the same place that he lives. So it was a wonderful trip, and it was too short, but we spent about 8 days there in Kenya.
So Pete actually has a website, Peter Larson, peterslarson.com, and a blog called Free Wheel Burning on Development, Public Health, and General Grumblings. And if you take a look at that blog this week, you'll see postings of photos from the end of Ramadan celebrations with Pete and several of our U of M students who are living with Muslim families in Kwale, Kenya, conducting research right now that is kind of orthogonally related to the workshop that Ella just ran in Nairobi. And so those photos, I would encourage our listeners, and I'll post that link on our blog cast tomorrow. They are really touching photographs of families celebrating. As Pete says, everyone had a fantastic time except for the goat, because as some of you know, that's the end of fasting for the Ramadan season, and they do kill a goat and feast and return to a kind of more normal rhythms in their households. But I think Pete is a fantastic resource. And it sounds like from the very moment you stepped off the plane, it was a whirlwind of Larson mediated.
Yes, it was. We were pulled over for loading in a pedestrian crosswalk. And so some excitement ensued.
So you first almost got arrested, and then what?
And then I was a fugitive in Kenya.
You basically evaded the arrest.
We did.
And went where?
I don't think it was very serious, but
I doubt
we went straight to a nightclub.
What?
Yes, we just were trying to, you know, just blend in and get lost in the crowd.
And sweat the plane smell off.
Blow off some steam.
Okay, then. I'm increasingly impressed by the by the immersion, shall we say.
We
the
immersion to experience. See some local music. And
how was that?
It was wonderful, actually. I love African music.
Uh-huh.
I'm not super familiar with Kenyan music. I've listened to music from Zaire and Zimbabwe, and so it was fun. Actually, there was a band from the Congo that was playing, actually.
Oh, how fabulous.
Yeah, it was outstanding.
So you got off a plane from Detroit and went, after evading arrest, straight to a nightclub where you danced to Congolese music with a bunch of Kenyan partiers.
Pretty much, yeah, yep.
That is spectacular.
Yeah, we wanted to ease into, you know,
the Michigan difference, people. This is how we do it. This is how we do it. And it's no surprise to those of us who know. Well, Kenyan music is incredibly varied, and we do have quite a lot of it to listen to today. I'm tempted to introduce our listeners just briefly before we dive into the details of your workshop, Ella, to a tune by a young Kenyan hip-hop artist, Wangechi. She is one of the many female hip-hop artists kind of coming up the ranks in Kenya's scene, and is someone who, after a pretty serious car accident last year, is kind of resuming her career with a slightly more reflexive and collaborative tone to her more recent work than what she was doing before she survived the car accident. Now, Nairobi is a dangerous place in a lot of ways, not the least of which is what we all face here as well, which is road safety. But we're really delighted that Wangechi is turning out new stuff, and we want to share with our listeners a collaborative tune that she's done with another artist from Kenya, Lena. It's called They Don't Know. They Don't Know Who We Are, and it's a tune that talks a little bit about, I think, some of the experiences of, in some ways evokes the experiences of being young women on a male-dominated hip-hop stage in a city like Nairobi, where in spite of the dangers and the perils, and indeed I think a lot of acts open with talking about who's had their cell phone ripped off today, you know, Nairobbery is the affectionate name, you know, but it's also a city with a lot of really positive energy and a lot happening that's really cool. So let's listen to Wangechi and evoke that a little bit, and then we'll come back and get into detail, Ella, less about the nightlife and more about the actual work that you
Sounds
did while
good.
You were in Nairobi. Here we go.
They wanna know who we are. Itabidi basi mini wajulishe. They don't know who we are.
Kani the same was set to badilishe.
They wanna know who we are. Shh, wacha mini kamilishe.
Nipe mic maji na mafuta. Kwenye beat na flow nimewakuta. Watajuta kwani fena nafanya. Kapuka ameruka. I'm playing, I'm only here to kill a beat. Drop a couple of bars and get you on your feet. Take you over to Mars and transcend. High up in the air with a lyric, I'll transcend. We provoke it a beat, we lay down. And my girl won't get she crazy, she laid down. And you see me, I'm going in. They don't know I'm a rapper, they thinking I only sing. Feeling like Beyonce or Kelly Rowland. The people step aside when they see me rolling. Oh.
Lazima mimi nijitambulishe. They wanna know who we are.
Itabidi basi mini wajulishe.
They don't know who we are.
Kani the same wase tubadilishe.
They wanna know who we are.
Shhh, wacha mini kamilishe.
Everywhere I go, people say I rock. And everyone I know simply says I'm hot. Lakini swali ni moja ama swali ni mingi, kwa sababu majibu ni kama kilogram 50. Na nasikia hivi hivi yani 50-50. Mini superstar ama mini ordinary, wakiuliza ai kwa nini kila weekendi misi yone kani kani kani. Superstar kwa mafina ma fans kwa bima, though I chillin VIP I got no charisma. So my label, do you really know who I am? No you don't, cause you only see me on your electric box. Usiniweke kwenye box. Sawa sawa, in my issue ni sweet and sour, but I take it as it comes, all the way as it comes. And if you don't know, now you know.
They don't know who we are.
Si lazima mimi nijitambulishe.
They wanna know who we are.
Itabidi basi mini wajulishe.
They don't know who we are.
Kani the same wase tubadilishe.
They wanna know who we are.
Shh, wacha mini kamilishe.
The road the woman who they shatter every beat, yeah. The road the woman who they scatter every seat, yeah. The Ronya Thiwa who they kill them with the flow. Hey. The east side, she they kill them with the knock.
Cause everywhere we go, people always ask us. I'm phenomenal, she phenomenal. Double on the dose, overdose, you got a head top 10. Killing number one and now they know.
They don't know.
Why guess she?
They wanna know.
It's a mini bass in English.
They don't know.
Something like a phenomenon.
They wanna know.
Phenangoma zakoni ha.
Bring the beat back.
Back. It's WCBN FM Ann Arbor. It's hot in here, and this is Rebecca Harden from the School of Natural Resources and Environment at the University of Michigan, where it's really all about the Kenyan hip hop today in terms of what's happening in the world. And that was Wangechi, a young 20 something female rapper out of Nairobi whose work with a lot of male rap artists from Nairobi is definitely worth your time to take a look at and listen to. She's one of many young female voices emerging on the hip-hop scene in Nairobi, and that's just one way that we here at Hot in Here see the kind of energy we recognize as, you know, sustainable energy for the future of this planet and that we want to kind of call out. There is a remarkable beacon of that energy to my left in the studio today, Dr. Carmela Tomei, who is a research assistant professor at the School of Public Health here at the University of Michigan, also increasingly engaged in teaching writing at Eastern Michigan University. Dr. Tomei specializes in helping science, tech, engineering, and math students and junior faculty abroad to effectively and persuasively communicate scientific ideas. Her teaching approach is encouraging writers to reflect on connections between their discipline, its values, and its ways of communicating, and then to step back and think about how those forces are shaping writing in their fields. Students in Ella's workshops have to think about the story of their research and how it fits into broader conversations happening around the research questions that they're engaging. So I've talked a lot off the air with Ella Tomei about these ideas, but I'd like to talk to you on the air today, Ella, about maybe first how, just listening to the way that you sum up what you do, it sounds like there's a journey there.
Yeah, absolutely. I worked in public health research for over a decade here at U of M in social epidemiology. And for the uninitiated, I'm not sure exactly who is in the audience, but epidemiology is an area of public health that focuses on patterns of disease and disease development and disease transmission. And you've probably heard epidemiologists being interviewed on the radio about the flu or Ebola outbreaks, things like that.
Absolutely. More and more.
Absolutely. And my area of research involves looking at how social factors like income, education, and also social isolation, depression, and other social factors impact health, mostly chronic diseases. I've done a lot of research on neighborhoods and what makes them healthy and what makes them less healthy and where the challenges are. And I focused a lot of my work on health disparities related to where a person lives.
And that work has been done in large part here at home.
That's right. That's
so now
right.
You're sort of branching out then.
Right. Right. I found over the years I didn't feel as connected as I wanted to with my work and the people in the neighborhoods that I was studying and their context artists and their stories. And so, you know, I got into public health because I wanted to be connected with people and I wanted to make a difference. And slowly I realized that I needed to make a change in my career. And in my new role, I'm still working to improve public health, but just in a different way. I'm using a different approach now. I'm working with students, as you said, and junior faculty to help them become successful scientists, both domestically and internationally as well. I started in Ecuador last year. I partnered with an NGO there, Sustainable Sciences Institute. And I taught a scientific manuscript writing workshop at the University of San Francisco in Quito. And so that's in the capital city of Ecuador.
Now, Ecuador, if I'm not mistaken, is a country that's been putting a lot of resources into higher education and professional development of scientists. And
yes. There's tons of pressure there for the scientists to produce, to develop scientific collaborations mm-hmm. and to publish. Mm-hmm. And there's a lot of barriers and challenges there.
I would love to draw you out later on whether you see parallels between Ecuador within the sort of Central and South American arena and Kenya within the African arena in terms of emerging as places where there's leadership on this kind of work.
Absolutely. Yeah. And, you know, what I realized when I was there is that, you know, I kind of went in my, you know, this first workshop I taught in Ecuador with a sort of a nuts and bolts approach. And when I got there and learned more about the context and talked to the people there, I realized that there are really deeper issues that need to be addressed.
Such as?
Well, you know, accessing resources and really understanding strategies about how to publish and really reaching out to collaborate with partners in various, you know, international settings. And so it was a real education for me as well last year.
I can just imagine. And at the same time, I'm dying to ask, like, so Spanish, English? What are the language politics of doing this kind of work internationally?
Yeah, that's a great question because I'm very limited. English is my only language. And that was not a problem at all. I have a very slow cadence. And
we're loving it. Aren't we loving it?
Yeah. Some students were concerned when I went down to Ecuador. All of them speak English. But I do speak very slowly, and all of them understood me pretty well. So no troubles there. And in Kenya, their English is impeccable, all of the students. Again, it wasn't a problem at all. But I did ask them beforehand, you know, about that, just to make sure.
Yeah, that makes sense. I think that English is a language that's coveted in many ways and for which people are reaching as a medium to express themselves in the scientific world, certainly. So it's great to be able to offer more and better and more thoughtful access to that to people who are on that edge in their own trajectories.
Yeah, and I think in Kenya, when they learn to write, they're writing in English right away from a very young age.
So Kenya was a really different context for you then.
Very different, very different. And I learned as much as I could. The trip was planned with a sort of a short lead time. So I did as much as I could contacting the students on Skype and trying to get a sense of where they were at, what their needs were. Mm-hmm. They were students in the College of Agriculture and Veterinary Science.
At the University of Nairobi.
That's right. That's right.
That's a big place.
It's a big place. Sprawling campus. There are seven actual sort of sub-campuses that comprise the entire University of Nairobi campus. And it's just this sprawling, beautiful, lush, landscaped setting where and we spent most of our time in, as I said, the agricultural and veterinary sciences college. Uh-huh. And there's a lot of hands-on facilities there for agricultural production.
Wow.
They gave us a very quick tour of the, there is a dairy production facility there, and they sell dairy products and farmland. And
I've met with the provost and other upper-level administrators at that university when I've done workshops in the past at University of Nairobi, and many of them are keeping cattle herds and camel herds. Yes, and, you know, it's like it is. It's a huge kind of incubator for new approaches to food production.
Yes, it was. So there were the facilities there, but it was, you know, against this sort of beautiful pastoral backdrop that was just breathtaking.
And it is very lush
there. Yes.
I recall, actually, when we were there in 2011 doing a workshop on emergent disease, that we had folks from CDC Nairobi and the national ministries, and everyone adjourned to a kind of club on the campus for lunch that overlooks a vast golf course. And it was like, wow. I mean, you know, we tend to assume that we're sitting in these university campuses that are the very apogee of what a campus can be. But sitting that day looking over the expanse of green on the University of Nairobi campus, I thought, wow, this is pretty cool. And they also have fantastic student radio and facilities for that on that
campus. Yeah, it was absolutely an amazing experience. I ate at that same club, I think, that you were at.
Open air,
And I was amazed by the food. It's very, in some ways, the traditional food, maize, a lot of maize products. It's very simple, but very fresh.
Yeah, and super tasty.
And very tasty. Yeah. Kale, greens. Yeah. So I really enjoyed that part as well.
Well, tell us, with whom were you working at the University of Nairobi?
So I was working in concert with Dr. Jesse Njoka. And
who directs the Center for Sustainable Drylands and Social Systems.
That's right. And so he really was instrumental in setting up the workshop and being a strong partner for the workshop. He facilitated my connection with two junior faculty there.
Oh, great.
Yeah, and they are Judith Siomba and Stephen Marithi, and they were both fantastic. Their titles are lecturer, but they're the equivalent of our
assistant professors here.
Yes.
Right, that's the British system talking.
That's right, and doing some really fascinating research on integrating local communities into the management of human-wildlife conflict, and to really involve communities in setting priorities and understanding the complexities that surround those issues.
Well, this is why I appealed to Ella to enroll some of our students who happened to be in Kenya this year in the workshop, because it seemed to me like a terrific opportunity. All the things you're talking about are no less issues for young professionals in technical and scientific fields here in the States, right? Finding your voice, finding a way to distinguish what you have to say and what you've observed and analyzed from the fray of, you know, publish or perish kind of, right? And I'm getting from the students, and also from your own rigorous analysis of student evaluations, that it was a real success for these guys. Are you feeling good about it?
Yeah, it was a fantastic experience and a learning experience for me. I just sort of setting up my website, and I was thinking about what tagline I should use, and I decided on write, think, collaborate, because those are the three elements that I really try to focus on in the workshops. And that's something that, as developing scientists, we all need to learn.
Well, and people interested in the complex science of global change and problem solving fast enough to kind of make a positive difference, right?
That's right.
It's a huge part of that puzzle.
How does the dynamic of having U.S. students and international students in the workshop together, how did that add to the collaboration, learning, and also the writing, and what did that bring out?
It felt like a very authentic experience, I think, for people who are learning to collaborate by collaborating. Mm-hmm. So part of what I did was I trained all of the students on partner review. And so we talked about the writing process and the various stage of writing and how you can read your partner's work or your peer's work and give them feedback, and how to do that based on the draft or the stage of the writing. And so we all kind of worked together and talked about how this might look. And then they actually read each other's work and provided feedback and had a discussion about the various issues that they were trying to communicate and where their struggles were. And it felt like a very successful process.
How do you make people comfortable with getting feedback and criticism on their writing. I think that for a lot of people, that's the hardest thing, is to share something that they're not done with and they don't want other people to read it and tell them, well, this is what's wrong with it, or this is what you need to do. What's your advice that you give to students to be able to get that feedback in a positive way?
That's a great question. And I think that the first step to really giving thoughtful feedback and receiving feedback thoughtfully is to explicitly discuss the process of writing that we all go through and that we all struggle with. And thinking about it as a continuum, and in all the things that go into it along the way, and how we can really help each other in really helping each other to crystallize our message, what we're trying to convey. One effective strategy I found that students can use is asking each other questions. So giving feedback in the form of questions, because that feels like you're working with someone who is wanting to know more, who's genuinely interested in what you're trying to say, and would like clarification on something. And it feels non-threatening, I think.
Instead of imposing a norm of a disciplinary norm or a grammatical or a, yeah.
That's right. And the students were all coming, they were all in slightly different areas of research, which I think can be helpful. We talked a lot about audience and how to tailor your message to your audience. But we also recognize that sometimes you have to sort of step outside your discipline to really get a fresh perspective on your writing and how clear your message is. And I think that someone from the outside your discipline can often be very, very helpful in that process.
So what did you find from the student evaluations about what worked well and what didn't? And I'm also wondering how much you felt able to focus in on the actual writing process for each and every one and for these dyads of feedback givers versus and the broader kind of research process, like what are your data? How did you acquire them? How did you get to this argument? Who would you be a collaborative author? Would you be a first author? How much trust is needed to kind of forge collaborative authorship? I mean, those kinds of process questions. Did you address any of those as well?
Yeah. So the way I approached the workshop as a teacher is I combined videos that I had created that were very short live lecture segments, like 10 to 15 minutes, and then activities. So it was very hands-on. And the idea is that we were all creating knowledge together, that I wasn't the teacher and they weren't the students soaking up all of the wisdom that I had to impart. We were all sharing and learning together.
So are those videos going to be on your website that you're launching, or?
The videos I make for each location, and I really try to tailor them to each audience.
Wow.
And so I did share the videos with them and my slides. I try to, the ones that I made for Ecuador were quite different.
So I wonder then if your colleagues, your young colleagues at University of Miami, like Judith Siomba and Stephen Mariti, might use those materials in the future and do something like this without you, just because it's useful for their students. What do you think?
Absolutely. They were very interested in talking about ways that they could incorporate writing into the curriculum. One of the students' very favorite activities that they hadn't been exposed to previously was what I call a free write. Mm-hmm. So it's an informal writing activity where students step back and reflect on what they're doing. And the idea is that writing gives form to thought. And so they're thinking by writing. And so I might give them an activity like, pretend you're writing a letter to your 16-year-old brother explaining to them what your research question is and why it's important. And it really forces them to distill and crystallize what they're saying into a very clear message without jargon, and just to get to its core and to really clarify sometimes for themselves. And I definitely have that experience when I'm writing. And that's so that was a very effective tool. And I think that Judith and Stephen will be using that in their work.
That's
absolutely amazing. I mean, to sort of be able to plant those kinds of seeds. I know that you're also looking forward and thinking about having a workshop here in the fall and maybe even bringing Judith or other colleagues. I know that we have other faculty on the U of M campus, Jacinta Biener in anthropology, Christine Feek, who's at the English Language Institute, who are doing similar kinds of workshops, slightly different, but related workshops in Ethiopia this summer. Some of my students are engaged right now in a workshop in Gabon on a similar set of issues around professional development and scientific process and writing, particularly the writing process and the publishing process, because for so long, the African continent has provided research assistance to well-funded Euro, North American, Asian authors. And that's right. That is what's happened. Like, research itself has been an extractive industry that has tapped the knowledge of people on that continent, but published finished products that enhance the careers of people like those of us around this table. So I think that, you know, there's a broader kind of more revolutionary set of repercussions to what it is that you're doing, or maybe a set of motivations for what you're doing, which is changing that, changing the way that works.
Yes, building bridges. And the workshop and the writing and the critical thinking are part of it. But really, we're trying to create a bridge and a platform for all of us to collaboratively work together. I think there are so many angles and lenses through which you can use this experience. And again, this speaks to the importance of working with not only the students at the University of Nairobi, but also our students at the University of Michigan.
Right.
I teach a lot of these little modules on ethics and research principles. And this really ties in to those ideas.
The responsible conduct of research.
That's right.
Mm-hmm.
That's right.
Mm-hmm. Which these days is something that any student has to get certified in order to even apply for a National Science Foundation grant or a National Institutes of Health grant.
That's right.
Or, you know, there's a kind of, and it's very module based and less anchored in the actual challenges of collaboration and research.
That's right. So I
love that you're bringing that to life in these ways and creating an option for a more international space for a new generation of researchers to learn together about and talk about the differences between what that means in a context like Kenya and Ecuador and Michigan. It's really amazing what you're doing. We are closing in on the end of our hour here, and I don't want to lose track of some of the threads that you've offered us. I know that on our blogcast tomorrow, we'll be able to post links to your Kenyan colleagues' centers and websites and CVs to foreground some of their work as well as your own. And it would be great also to hear more from you. Well, I think we might want to just do one last tune before we come back with our farewell thoughts. Mm-hmm. And I'm wondering what the group wants to hear, because we've got a lot of good music.
Well, I think in honor of Ella's excellent dance moves straight off the plane, we should, and President Obama and his Luo ancestry, we should play a tune from his area. And this style of music is heavily influenced by the Congolese kind of style, moving out and bands playing around. This song certainly reminds me of being in Kisumu, dancing myself and just saying, okay, one more song. But the songs blend together. It's like the vocal part that changes. Like,
and then
seriously,
it's another day.
Seamlessly into the other. And then suddenly, hours later, one more song is still happening, but you're having a great time. But this song is called Lynette, and it's by Patty J. Onono and the Nyanza Success Orchestra.
Let's go.
This is WCBN FM Ann Arbor, and we are doing a little bit more of It's Hot in Here.
And in fact, I just want to say it is actually hotter in here, much hotter in here than when we first came in. I stepped out into the hallway, and when I opened the door to come back into the studio, it was hot in here.
It's amazing what happens when you get some brains and voices going.
It's an authentic experience.
I like that focus on the authentic very, very, very much.
Yeah. Ella Tomei. And speaking of authentic, we were just off mic listening to that wonderful tune. Jennifer, what was that tune?
It was called Lynette.
Uh-huh.
By Patty J. Onono and the Nyanza Success Orchestra out of Kisumu.
Man, I want like an Ypsilanti Success Orchestra. I want, you know, that name is fantastic,
yes.
Right? We were talking off mic about authenticity and about the ways that communities of writing on the African continent for African audiences exist. They abound. I mean, Derek Peterson right here at Michigan has studied creative writing, what he calls creative writing, the tradition of writing in particular East African communities. And I know I've worked with a press in Gabon called Raponda Walker, which is a very unapologetically by for and about Gabonese kind of press that does beautiful work. So there's a lot of, very varied communities of writing and production that exist on the African continent and should and will. But at the same time, it's very hard for intellectuals and scientists and academics to marshal resources if they aren't also able to attain international visibility through work in these more globally recognized and circulating venues. So it sounds like your work, Ella, is helping people think about, you know, for a particular piece of work, like what audience do they want and why, and how can they have, mobility across these categories
of writing and thinking
on
their own terms.
Yeah. Audience is something we talked a lot about in the workshop. Not a lot of it has to do with how regional a particular issue is, who it affects. Would someone in Ecuador, say, care about the research? And, you know, different questions are suitable for different audiences. And trying to think about the scope of journals and to really get practice in looking at those journals and their...
Yeah, I think of a former SNRE student, Valerie Benka, who wrote about wildlife livestock conflicts, and she kept saying, I would like to publish my thesis in an East African animal husbandry journal. And I kept saying, no, you should go for impact factor and publish in a... She's like, I'd like to just go for impact, please. And she did. And like she sent her thesis to research centers in Zimbabwe. And like people would write to me and to her and say, this is incredible work. We're using it now in our, you know, nice to bear in mind that, you know, there are many different ways to see, to set your work into circulation. But to get to that point, you also have to have some clarity about what you're doing.
Yeah. And I've also been learning a lot from our librarians here at the University of Michigan, the librarians working with the African Studies Library, and the librarian from African Studies.
Right.
Lloyd Mbabu.
Oh, fantastic research. Who also has written some really thoughtful pieces about violence and electoral politics in Kenya himself. He's a wonderful writer.
Yes, absolutely. And I had the librarian, I asked the librarian from the University of Nairobi to join us at the workshop as well. And so he was able to connect students with resources they hadn't been connected with before. So that was a great connection to make.
So it becomes a multimedia enterprise too. And the question of the spoken word is not too far away, perhaps. I wonder. Well, I wonder if you have any last thoughts for us about where you're headed next with this work and what kinds of things you want to get into in the coming academic year or two, and let us know where we can look to find more information about that.
Absolutely. Well, I definitely want to get back to Kenya. I'd love to work with my Kenyan collaborators to bring them here, and then also to go back because I've really just barely begun to scratch the surface and to learn about what their context is and where their challenges lie. And so to go back would really, I think, benefit me and also the students there and our own University of Michigan students as well. I started a website, CarmelaTalTomi.net. That's my full name. And putting some resources on there slowly. It's a little bit beta right now, but about the workshops and my work internationally and nationally.
Fantastic.
And we will link to that site on our blog, hotinhere.us.
That's a really great, it'll be a rich blogcast this week. We've got various colleagues and various resources to connect everybody with. But I also just have to say thank you so much for kind of getting, we didn't take you to a nightclub, but you kind of got off the plane and came into the studio, which is almost as good. We did a little dancing today.
That's right.
Right? I think we even might have actually captured some of it on film, which is terrifying. But, so everybody, look for that blogcast coming up.
It was my great pleasure. Thank you.
I look forward to hearing more and maybe doing an update in October when we have more colleagues from different African collaborative platforms, Gabon, Ethiopia, Kenya, here in town to talk about how this kind of bridge building is happening in various parts of the world right now and how to make it happen better and better. So, Ella, thank you for your leadership on our campus on these issues. Thank you for sharing it with us in the studio today. Jennifer, thank you for bringing that last song in. And I wanted to think about going out on a song that you and I have used before in our Afro-optimism.
Yes!
10 over 10, which is NATO MC. And it's a song that he, you know, uses to position himself as what he terms the only MC with an MSC. And I think he's currently bouncing back and forth between spectacular mediatized events in Uganda and elsewhere and all over the African continent, but also his studies on in an energy sector related field in Dublin, Ireland, if I'm not mistaken.
I think he's actually Nigerian.
He's from Nigeria.
Uganda can't claim
People
him, but they love him there.
They dance a lot to him. And this tune is harking back to the Just a Band tune we opened with today, really just full of that energy that's like, we are coming, people. We young African minds are coming, and this is how it's going to be. So let's go out with Nato MC, and I'd like to thank all our listeners and our engineer, Cameron, who is just so awesome. Thank you for being here today. Thank you to Jennifer, Sam, especially Ella Tomei. Yes. And we'll see you all on the blogcast tomorrow.
Bye-bye.
Things are not the same. Things are not the same as before. Things are not the same. No. Things are not the same as before.
My condition, but I turn things around. I might fit that description. I'm a pee like the pyramid. I'm not no Egyptian. I'm sick, no prescription. Can turn this to fiction. When it comes to the girls, that's a whole nother story. Only keep the ones that can cook and clean for me. So when I get that pot full of soup and that rice that I like, I do like a Maggie Cuba spice up your life.
She can
only cause I'm NC, the only MC with an MSC. So don't be surprised when they jealous me. I know levels done change, so they select me.
She can
oh shit, Baba Gordo. We celebrate as if we just hit the lotto. And what you've done is a lotto. Because levels done change.
Levels done change now. Ain't no free to hold me again. Now I'm 10 over 10. Levels done change now. Ain't no free to hold me again. Cause I'm 10 over 10.
Yes,
now
boss.
I'm 10 over 10. 10 over 10. 10 over 10. She can I. Now I'm 10 over 10. 10 over 10. 10 over 10. She can I. 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 Now I'm 10 over 10. She can I. 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 She can I.
And the money they extend, and they cannot comprehend how I managed to ascend. And you know I know go send. Plenty people go pretend as if say they're really friends, but I do not recommend. Cause I know their agenda. Return to sender, clear from my fender. No time to render, check my calendar. January, February to December. There's no space, I'm too blown to the BS. Y-E-S-P-S, Joe, multi-low, Emiyoriwo. Because levels don't gather up, gone. They can't form when they disform. I'm still tighter than the weed that their girlfriend fixed on. You know my P, I don't think it'll ever exhaust. She can not get
things are not the same. No. Things are not the same as before. No, things are not the same.